Jesus said, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy." Good morning, and welcome once more to my study. It's lovely to see you. For some, it might be a bit of a disappointment that we haven't returned back to normality and we haven't yet got back to the church. Whilst we should be grateful that the clergy can now stream from their churches and indeed go into their churches to pray, to record from St. John's Knutsford would be quite a complicated operation for me to do on my own. I'd have to learn how to position lights and microphones so that I could be seen and heard. That may yet happen, hopefully. Meanwhile, we need to try and be patient. So thank you for bearing with me. Although, kindly, some of you have indicated that you quite like this corner of my study. So thank you for your kindness and for letting me know. So this morning, we're going to be thinking about what Jesus meant when he said, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy." They're amazing words. I think that these words, perhaps, are going to be of great significance in the very near future. If we are ever to recover from this dreadful pandemic, I think perhaps the world is going to have to display mercy in a way that it hasn't for many, many years, perhaps decades. For it could be that very soon, millions and millions of people are going to be weeping and crying out and begging for clemency, for mercy. It seems to me that with unemployment rapidly rising in the UK, it would be an act of mercy, wouldn't it, if mortgage companies agreed that the payments could be deferred? It would be an act of mercy if banks agreed to freeze interest on credit cards. It would be an act of mercy if dividends to shareholders were put on hold. It would be a great thing if that could happen, wouldn't it? Think of the relief, think of the joy that would sweep over the lives of millions of people. But we could extend this further, couldn't we? We already know that a global recession could well be on the way, and that will hit the poorest countries the hardest. Rishi Sunak, our Chancellor, has warned that we could all be facing a recession on a scale unheard of before in human history. This will force poorer governments to borrow even more and drive them even further into debt. So it's not surprising that one of the cardinals in charge of the Vatican's Evangelism and Mission Department has wondered aloud if the COVID-19 crisis could lead to a jubilee of forgiveness of debt, so that all those who are in the tombs and graves of liability could be unchained and released so that they might lead some kind of life. Could it not be possible that governments, not only in the UK, but also around the world, were able to establish perhaps mercy budgets that were geared to help people and their families and their businesses get back on their feet? Wouldn't it be marvellous to see that? Wouldn't it make our hearts sing and be glad to see the UK and the world coming together to help the dispossessed, the bereaved and the marginalised? Didn't Jesus say, "Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy"? As I say, those are amazing words. But in order to understand them, we need to look at them in their context. First of all, remember what we've been saying. Jesus is seated on the top of a mountain. Back in the day, mountains were conceived as the place where heaven and earth met. And so here is Jesus seated, enthroned, as it were, in the heavens, to bring the words of the kingdom of heaven down to the kingdoms of the earth. And so Jesus, in speaking, is reconciling, he's bringing together heaven and earth. And he's doing that so that God's will be done on earth just as it is in heaven. And so, as we've been saying, Jesus is ushering in a new kingdom, a new administration, a new way of life. His kingdom, he says, is not going to be like the kingdoms of the world. And so he says that the only qualification you need in order to enter this kingdom is nothing. Nothing in my hand I bring, simply to the cross I cling, is what we sometimes sing. And so we need to bring nothing in our hands. In fact, that is the only way that we can come in, when we come in admitting that we have nothing, when we come in admitting that we are debtors outside of the kingdom and we need to be let in. Now, those who are in debt mourn. Those who are in debt are poor in spirit, for they understand that what they do have is spiritually worthless. The Bible tells us that everything that this world values and wars to own, everything that this world possesses, is not the currency of the kingdom of heaven. And that is why the Bible over and over again warns us not to love the things of the world. For all that is in this world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not from God, but of man. And so it is when we realize that we are debtors, that we have nothing to give, nothing with which we can buy our way into the kingdom of heaven, that we become meek and teachable, and we start to hunger and thirst for righteousness. We start to hunger and thirst for mercy, because we want a righteousness, we want an acceptance that's not based on our looks or wealth or status or education or moral standing or professional performance. We want a righteousness that is entirely based on the mercy of God. And that is why it is precisely at this point in the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus says, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy." That's the immediate context of Jesus' words. He is ushering in the kingdom of heaven into the kingdoms of this world from the top of a mountain. But we should also remember something else as we approach these words of Jesus. Jesus was ushering in a kingdom of forgiveness, a kingdom of mercy in a world that was cruel and pitiless. Back in the day, the religion was cruel. For back in the day, many people thought, as they do today, that you could get God's approval and God's blessing by your good deeds, which meant that you would behave in certain ways, which meant that you did not hang out with those who were unlike you. You would not befriend deplorables. You would not befriend the unenlightened. You would not befriend the politically incorrect. In the Bible, such people were called sinners. And so Jesus was often asked, "Why is it, Jesus, that you're eating and drinking with sinners? Why is it that you're eating and drinking with prostitutes, with those who fraternize with the pagan Romans?" For back in the day, it was thought that if you got too close to those kind of people, they would infect you morally. Because it's always the case, isn't it, that the unhealthy infect the healthy. It never works the other way around. as we have become very much aware. And so back in the day, the righteous would never befriend the unrighteous. But if the religion was cruel, so was the politics. We need to remember that Rome was the superpower of the age. And many Romans believed that to show mercy was a sign of pathological weakness. For mercy by its nature was not something that could be earned, because if you earned mercy, it wasn't mercy. So mercy was irrational. And so it was that the great philosopher Seneca once wrote that to show mercy was irrational and beneath the dignity of rational men. He wrote, "An action performed under the influence of mercy, when combined with compassion and tenderness, is out of keeping with the dignity of man." Can you imagine? And here is Jesus saying, "Blessed are the merciful." And here is Seneca saying that mercy is out of keeping with the dignity of rational beings. In the course of time, sadly, all this was taken one further and fatal step. The German philosopher Nietzsche said, "Pity, mercy, preserves the things that are ripe for decline. It defends things that have been disowned and condemned by life," which is why, of course, he hated Christianity. For he said that Christianity always takes the side of the weak, the low, the botched. And so to have pity on the weak, the low, and the botched can only result in the loss of power. And so he argued that once the strong and healthy take the side of the weak, this could only have a great harmful effect. Contrast Seneca, contrast Nietzsche, contrast the thinking of the world with the thinking of Jesus, where he says, "Blessed are the merciful." My friends, I want to drive this home, because what Jesus is doing is upending both the religion and the politics of the kingdoms of the world. For Jesus is reminding us this morning, each and every one of us, that in order to enter the kingdom of heaven, each and every one of us must throw ourselves entirely on the mercy of God. I wonder if you've done this. My fear is that some of you may not have done this, perhaps because you do not know what mercy is. And that is why Jesus told the story of the Good Samaritan, because there he describes mercy. He says in that parable that mercy and pity are emotions that arise in the human heart when you see someone in distress, when you see someone in trouble. And so there is the Samaritan, and he sees a man lying by the side of the road. He's been robbed. He's been beaten up. He was poor in spirit. He was mourning. He was yearning. He was begging. He was seeking for righteousness, for mercy, because everything of value had been stripped from him. He had nothing. He was utterly dependent. And so we are told that the Samaritan saw him in his need. But not only did the Samaritan see him in his need, not only did he see him externally, there was an internal response to that external need, which is what happened. Jesus says that when the Samaritan saw him, he had compassion on him. He was full of pity. He himself was distressed by what he saw. And so what did he do? Well, he responded practically to relieve the distress. Jesus tells us that he went to the stricken man and bound up his wounds. We are told that he poured in wine and oil, which meant that he didn't keep his distance, but he came close to him. He took hold of his limbs, his hands and his feet, and he bandaged up his injuries. Now listen to this. Fourthly, and amazingly, the Samaritan did this for a man who was totally unlike him. He did this for a man who was his mortal enemy. Remember who the Samaritans were. They were half-bred Jews who didn't worship in Jerusalem but on Mount Gerizim, and they were loathed and despised, and no Jew would defile himself by walking through their land, and yet here is the Samaritan stopping to help an alien. He is stopping to help the other. He is stopping to help a Jew lying in the road. Do you see what is happening here? Jesus is telling us something very, very profound about himself and about us. He is saying, do you not see? Do you not understand? I am the second person of the Trinity, and I have come down to you. I have come down to save, to have mercy, to have pity on those who are totally unlike me, because I have seen your distress. I have seen that you are lost and anxious and living in the fear of sickness and in the fear of death. I have seen that you are all harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd, for you have all turned to your own way, and that you have no answers in the face of death. For what can you say? What can I say in the face of death? What hope do I have? Can I raise myself from the grave? Can you raise yourself from the grave? For you are of the dust, and to dust you shall return. For I, says Jesus, am eternal, but you are temporal. I am sinless, but you are sinful. I am powerful, but you are powerless. And I have come to save. I have come to give you mercy. And then, of course, we all know what Jesus did. Like the Samaritan, he paid the price. He paid the price because you and I were debtors and ransacked. We were debtors outside the gates of heaven because we were hopeless and helpless. And if ever we were to be saved, someone else had to pay the debt. And so we all have to become beggars of God's mercy. The Apostle Paul tells us that we've been bought with a price, and that price was Christ's own blood, because that's what it cost. You remember, don't you, back in the book of Genesis, when God expelled man, when God expelled humanity from the garden? And when he did that, he placed an angel at the entrance of the garden. And that angel held a flashing sword so that you and I could not come in. Because the only way back into the garden, the only way back into a relationship with God, was to go under that sword, under that flashing sword. And so Jesus came. That's why he's on a mountain speaking, because Jesus came to go under that sword. On the cross of Calvary, Jesus paid the price. So if you and I want to come in, we can do so based on God's mercy. I need to finish. Do you see how if we accept this, it will change us? It will change us from the inside out. For once we take God's mercy, once we receive it, once we lay hold of it, It melts you. It softens you. Seneca was wrong. Seneca was said it would make you undignified. Nietzsche said it would make you weak. Jesus said, my mercy will make you great. It will lift you up to glory. It will lift you up to heaven. So trust him. It will transform you. It will change you. And this mercy of God will change the world. Amen.